Sublime book. In the last class we were seeing about love and children. You know, the background is that the Prophet has come to these people. They represent the people suffering in ignorance due to many different things, and a God comes to us to deliver us from ignorance and make us aware of our true, blissful and ever perfect, ever free nature. And to that effect, a God comes and then imparts wisdom and goes. Now the imparting of wisdom was going on in a subtle, unperceived manner for a long time. Now when the time came for the Prophet al-Mustafa to leave, now there is the need felt that he should go. People who wanted to hold on to him, they said, please don't go. But there was a wise lady, Almitra, amongst them, and she said, well, you must go. But before you go, please tell us some of the important things of our life that shed light on us. So you will leave your knowledge with us while physically you will be going away. So this is what happens. Bodies, they come and go. But the purpose of the incarnation of God is while the body is kept there, it teaches. That is how all actions are performed. So in 12 long years that the Prophet was there, the people connected with him with that bond of love, which was not exactly like the bond with which people are connected with each other. And there is a bond that is in the family, like we connect with our parents, our spouses, our children, friends and so forth. That is one type of connection. But that is not the liberating connection. In fact, it binds us down to our carnality. It does not liberate us from that. So there is another type of loving bond. Here one can remember how Sri Ramakrishna's disciples said about their connection with Sri Ramakrishna, that he loved us more than our parents could love. That love is of a very different nature. That love does not depend on a genetic connection as such. I mean, for example, parents love their children because of the genetic connection. That is what gives them the idea that they are mine. Then there is another connection that we see. It is based on our mutual needs at the physical or mental levels. We get connected because we work at the same business. So we are colleagues, we cooperate with each other and so forth. Then there is connection due to various other reasons, friends, neighbors, where we get connected and bound. But none of them is a liberating connection. This is a special, tremendously loving and yet not binding connection. And therefore, Once this connection was established, now the wisdom could be imparted. You can see that for imparting the wisdom, there has to be a rapport between the teacher and the taught. A connection has to be there. It is discussed in Upanishads as well, that how the knowledge gets transmitted, that the one end of that is the teacher, the other end of that that spectrum of knowledge is the student. The teacher is one end, student is another end, and then what connects them is this knowledge. Knowledge connects them, teacher and the student, and the function of that knowledge is carried out by the speech of the teacher, pravachana. It is the discourse from the teacher to the taught is the connection. So, thus this connection is established now in 12 years. That is the major work. It is like you say, once you have the pipeline, they were telling that how big this pipeline was made to deliver the petroleum from Alaska to the mainland. They call it lower 48 of United States. It is 50 states. So Alaska is up on the high there, very high in the sense the latitude is far towards north. And then there is Hawaii, which is far, so of the 50 states, these two are different. And then others are lower 48. So, to take the petroleum, from there, Alaska to these other parts of the land, then they built a big pipeline. You can see that pipeline. It is one of the that attraction for the visitors, that to know about this, to see this massive pipeline. Now, it took a long, long time to get this pipeline in place. Once this pipeline is in place, now it doesn't take long for the petroleum to be delivered, you know. So now, 12 years spent in forming this connection. Now the imparting of the wisdom, flow of the words is easy now. So he has been telling about various things. Last time we saw that the marriage, what is marriage, that was told. Then what about children? Parents and the children connected to form the core family. Now there is this misconception that becomes a big torment for all concerned, that the parents feel that the children are theirs. It is a very natural, spontaneous feeling. They take kind of ownership. This doesn't happen deliberately. This happens at a very subtle level, that they are mine. And so the prophet told that they come from you, but they don't belong to you. They are like the arrows that are shot from your bow. The man and the woman, they become bow and string. And then these are the arrows shot from that. But the arrows, they were shot from the bow, but they do not remain with the bow. They are shot by the archer. Archer is different again, who owns the bow and the arrows. That archer shoots them with strong, powerful arms stretching both of them, both means the string and the bow, and it is stretched and then the arrow goes far. So this is to be remembered. A remembrance of this brings the purpose of the family is then made clear, that it is to support. Sri Ramakrishna used to tell that look upon yourself as the nanny of your kids. And the nanny does everything very faithfully and maybe better than a mother can do, because she is trained and she has that expertise. And yet she knows that these children do not belong to her or him. So treat yourself like that, so that what happens, you will bring up the children very well, and yet you will not impose upon them. You will not torture yourself by the idea that they belong to me and get entangled and thus impede your path for liberation. So after this has been told, then we saw last time that a rich man, as we didn't read that portion, we were just beginning, that a rich man approaches and asks that, speak to us about giving. A rich person is approached by many for donations, for giving things for the society. A rich person is, therefore, you know, is always concerned, how shall I give, whom shall I give, how much shall I give, it is, and why should I give, it is, I earned it by my hard labor, and why should I just give it to somebody? And this is, therefore, this rich man asks about giving, and the answer comes, you give but little when you give off your possessions. It is when you give off yourself that you truly give. What is this off yourself? I am reminded by that word, a story Sri Ramakrishna used to tell, that it is a rich man has a big garden, and he has appointed a gardener to look after, take care of the garden. And from time to time, this rich man visits the garden, the orchard and all that there. So, one day when the gardener knew that he will be coming, he just made everything right to receive the owner with proper respect. So, and then when he came, he told the owner, this is a very nice mango from the garden, from this orchard, and this is very nice papaya that I have kept for you. I plucked it yesterday. It is the best one. So please take it. Now what is that gardener giving? The gardener is not giving anything from his possessions. The garden itself belongs to the owner, not to the gardener. But what the gardener is doing is to give, to impart his love. That love is that what we can give of ourselves. The giving is of the possessions, who owns them anyway. We labor under the delusion that it is mine. But it doesn't really belong to us. The money does not belong to anybody. It is the love that we can give, of giving of ourselves than giving of our possessions. And giving of our possessions is a very secondary thing. That is why the Prophet said, when you are giving of your possessions, you are really not giving anything. You give but little. It is but when you give of yourself, not of your possessions. And that is what can you give? Your love. You care for the other person. That is what is the idea of giving. That incident happened, I tell about it. It is a very illustrative incident that that day it was that man's birthday, a devotee here, and he said that my daughter gave me on my birthday this present. The daughter was sitting by his side, and then, but you know what she did? It was charged to my credit card. And the daughter was protesting, "Oh, Dad, why you need to tell this? Don't tell this." She was a bit upset why this point was told, that it was charged to my dad's credit card. But obviously the idea was that girl didn't have any money of her own. So she took it from dad and gave it to you. But what she did? Added her appreciation, her love. That was not taken from the dad's that credit card. The credit card didn't give her any love or appreciation of the dad. That was from her. So that was her possession. That was valuable. That is you give of yourself. When you give to Lord, many people, that we do it as an offering. That, oh Lord, please, take these fruits from me. Oh Lord, please take this money from me. Or many other things, take this service from me. Now, what is the important thing there? There is a beautiful verse in Bhagavad Gita about this. That what do you give? Lord says that, well, it is the devotion that people should give me, and that is what I accept. That devotion is put in a container, that's all. Like somebody wants water, then you put the water in a glass, give, and that person does not swallow the glass and just takes the water. If you give an empty glass, he would just look up at you with wonder, what is this? What am I going to do with this? I asked for water. So, God, what does he accept? That verse says, Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhaktya prayachati. The one who gives me, say, a leaf or a flower, a fruit or water, whatever, bhaktya, through devotion, that I take, that I accept for the devotion that it contains. Like anybody would accept the glass for the water or tea or whatever it contains. Not the glass as such is not important. So it is like that, whatever we give to the Lord, the material is not important. It is the love that we pour in it. That is of ourselves. Other things are of our possessions. It is, what do we give of our possessions? After all, whose are they? all those possessions, they really do not even belong to us. When somebody becomes a monk and then says that, well, I have given up everything. So this incident is reported by my predecessor here, Swami Sarvagatananji, when he was at our ashrama in Kankhal at the foothill of Himalayas. So there is a hospital run by Ramakrishna Mission, and then there were many Gwith like him there. So when there was a question that, well, we have these all the swamis, the newcomers, novices, they have come there. They said that, well, we have given up everything. And then the head of that center, a great disciple of Swami Vivekananda, spiritually all imbued with that spirit of Sri Ramakrishna, Swami Vivekananda and Vedanta. So he said, well, what have you given up? And tell me what you have given up. You may say, well, I gave up the parents and family. Did that belong to you? It never belonged to you. How can you give up that? You may say, I have given up property. Did it anyway belong to you? It did not. Those things never belonged to you. So, remember what you have given up. And he told his servant, write in bold letters on the wall that giving up means giving loving service, providing loving service to everyone. That is what you give of yourself. That is of value. Other things, they come and go depending on what you have, you give and so forth. But real giving is what you give of yourself, not of your possessions per se. So, then he continues, for what your possessions, what are your possessions, but things you keep and guard for fear, you may need them tomorrow. We guard them, keep them. Today we use them, but tomorrow we have to store. And what may tomorrow bring, we are not sure. So in the fear, we keep them. And then, isn't that fear a big torture? Oh, tomorrow, who knows, let me keep all that with me. It is, and tomorrow, what shall tomorrow bring to the overprudent dog burying bones in the trackless sand as he follows the pilgrims to the holy city? What a beautiful example. Burying bones. Tomorrow I will come and pick them up, burying them in the trackless sand. The time is like that, a trackless sand. What will happen tomorrow, we don't know. Things will all be blown away in no time. It has happened several times in the history, and is happening all the time. But we do not take lessons. It is not for nothing that when Arnold Toynbee, one of the most celebrated historians of last century, when he was asked, what do we learn from history? And he said, we do not learn anything from history. That is why history repeats itself. This is the saying, history repeats itself. Had we learned from the history, we wouldn't have allowed it to repeat like this. But we do not learn from the lessons of the history. It is, see, in Germany, There was such, when Hitler came to power, Germany's Reich, it was a powerful nation that he was building, and everything was appearing as just going upwards. People stored treasures in all different ways. Lot of money, the German currency, the marks, they were stored. And when the war's results, Germany was losing very badly. All its this power was just getting destroyed. It was being captured. Now those marks, the German currency had become useless. Nobody was giving you a pound of potato would not be available even if you bring that currency in big bags. It was like that. So what happens to these treasures in time? They are all gone. So do not, that is why Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, do not store your treasures here where the moths eat, where that gets rusted, rotten, destroyed, but keep your treasures in heaven. So that is the important thing. What a beautiful, sublime way of putting this, in a very powerful way, putting them in the trackless sand. It is imagine that desert. There are no roads. You put a mark on the sand. Next day the sands change. Due to storm, things all are buried, and then you do not see where what is. So this is how it is all trackless sand. In the trackless sand, it is all buried in this manner. So this, therefore it is said, and what is fear of need, but need itself? What is fear of need? The fear of need is need itself. That is, it is, this is what the dread of the thirst, then he says, is not the dread of the thirst when your well is full, the thirst that is unquenchable. What a powerful message is this, see, the dread of the thirst that is unquenchable, no? Because your well is full and yet you are afraid that what will you do when you are thirsty. Now, obviously, that can be easily, logically one can see, then that thirst can never be quenched because your well is full and you are still have the dread of thirst. What will happen when I feel thirsty? It is an unquenchable thirst. And therefore, those who have little and give it all, their coffer is never empty. There are those who give little of much they have, and they give it for recognition, and their hidden desire makes their gifts unwholesome. And there are those who have little and give it all. These are the believers in life and the bounty of life, and their coffer is never empty. Well, friends, it is, one comes to understand these things, accept these things in the course of life as we examine. It is, the coffers are never empty, because there is a different connection. Last time I was telling that one of our devotees, after seeing how this the ashrama affairs run, how they all the needs here, how they we swamis do not seem to be doing any earning jobs, and yet how things happen, how things work, what is the economy that goes with it. She was saying that we are worried about what job will I get, and if I don't get the job, how shall I survive, how will I meet my expenses, and so forth. But how does this economy work, that the things go on, the money seems to somehow make its presence, and huge expenses, seemingly huge, you know, in that context, and that millions of dollars come and millions of dollars just go. How does it work that the giver is giving in that its own way? It is, and the coffers are never empty. If we do not give, if we hoard, then it happens then that it becomes useless. And we become like that overprotective dog, that is what he says. And these are, there are those who give with joy, and that joy is their reward. No, it is so important to feel that giving is joy. You give, and then that giving brings joy to you in return, in a way. And that is the reward, that joy that comes when you give. Because now, what is happening? Why do you get joy when you give? Because you are now connecting with another person at a loving level, with love at some level that is not just material. So that is where the joy springs up. And that is for everyone to see. When we snatch from somebody, it is not a joyous feeling. It is, we may feel a satisfaction for a minute, that, ha, now I snatched, I got. It goes away. It is terrible to see that. And when it is given in an irreverential way, still you do not feel that joy. Hey, you beggar, take this. That is not really giving. That does not bring joy. The joy when you give with reverence. So that is what is the meaning here, that and those who give with joy, and that joy is their reward. And there are those who give with pain, and that pain is their baptism. It is that pain of giving. Now it is, they have to learn, and therefore that is the baptism. That pain comes, that, oh, because this person wanted to hold, now that person is told, you have to give. How much? And the calculations begin. So that is the pain, you know. So that pain is the experience of learning. That, okay, do not worry about it. Give. It is, how much you give is not that matter at all. It is like Jesus mentions, that somebody gave a big amount, somebody gave a very small amount, and he says, this lady has given, you know, almost all of hers she has given. So she gives most because she gives of herself, and there is joy in that, the joy of giving. So, and there are those who give and know not pain in giving, nor do they seek joy, nor give with mindfulness of virtue. That is a very natural sharing. It is not even giving. It just is somebody's thing. Who am I to give that idea? There is a very famous couplet in Hindi of a saintly person who was known to be a very charitable person, a donor. Every morning he used to stand, and whosoever comes would give gifts. And somebody asked him, "Oh Rahim," his name was Rahim. So Rahim, why are you, you know, your eyes are downcast when you are giving? He said, the point is, I am not giving. The giver is somebody else. Denahar ko or hai, devat din rain. The real giver is somebody else who is giving day and night. People have the misunderstanding that I am giving, and that is why I feel ashamed and my eyes go down. It is, I am not even the giver. Who is the giver? We are like, say, pipelines. It is the pipeline cannot claim that it is the giver. There is some source and some receiver. So it goes through the channel that we call our body and mind and so forth. And through that it just gets transmitted. It is a pipe. We are like pipe. So, and if thing sticks in the pipe, then the pipe gets choked, jammed, useless. So, it is therefore, this is a high spiritual awareness to see that this giving is to be an automatic, spontaneous thing. It is without the idea that I am giving. And does it belong to us? It just came at one end, like a pipe. Things came in one end and is going from the other end. If it doesn't go, then the pipe gets choked. It is told when I was seeing that pipeline in Alaska and some other places also, that they have to keep the supply going. Even if there is no demand, they still need to keep the supply going, because otherwise the pipe will get choked. It will get filled, choked, and that's it. It will become then a very big operation to clean it. So, similarly, we should see that the giving should just happen. Things are coming at one end and going from the other end. If not, then it doesn't work. That is no more a pipe. We become then choked persons. So, he gives a very nice analogy. They give as in yonder valley, the myrtle, as the myrtle breathes its fragrance into space. It is that myrtles, that flowers. Now their fragrance, they are not saying, hey, come on, I am giving you the fragrance. It is at this price. And even if you are not giving me any money, you have to acknowledge, you see, that you are indebted to me because it is my fragrance and I am giving it to you. No, it is a spontaneous outpour. So, that giving should be like that. That it is another beautiful prayer. It is that nothing belongs to me. Whatever is belongs, it is to you, O Lord. And I am just giving to you. Because all the people that I am giving, you are in their hearts. You are their true being. So when I am giving to them, I am giving yours to you. So it is, I really am not involved in it. So this is a matter of practice. Practicing the awareness of oneness, which will free us. The practice that the same being is in all, the same divine spirit dwells in all. What does it do to us? It frees us. I am this, and that is mine, that is not mine, that is let me. That is a feeling that keeps us bound and keeps on piling more misery. And then there is a practical point that is being discussed. It is, through the lands of such as these, God speaks. It is, they give like the myrtle breathes fragrance into this peace. Through their hands, God speaks. That is, and from behind their eyes, He smiles upon the earth. Look at the beautiful poetic expressions and how useful this content is for our being liberated, for our liberation. This is a very beautiful idea. One gets bound by the positions and the idea that I am giving, that other person should be thankful to me for that. One level is not giving at all, it is mine. I will use it for my sake, that's it, not giving at all. You know that famous story. And that a very stingy person was only wanting to possess, never to give. Now that person jumped for swimming and then he caught in a current and was drowning. So other man jumped to save him. And then when he said to him, screamed at him, "Give me your hand so that I can pull you out, you know. Give me your hand." And the fellow was, the hand was not coming out. Then somebody who knew this drowning fellow said, "No, no, say, take my hand." Then, yeah, so then it worked because this man was never in the habit of giving, you know. Always taking. So such becomes our condition that it is taking, and then we become, you know, narrowed down. Our circle becomes shrinking and shrinking instead of expanding. The bondage becomes tighter and tighter. So therefore, it is to be remembered that it is those who give without even the idea that they are giving. Through them, God smiles on this world. It is, and then this practical point. It is well to give when asked, but it is better to give unasked through understanding. Give when somebody asks, yes, you may give. But if it is not asked, but you feel the need of that person. It is, and then you share if you have the means to remove that. So it is, and to the open-handed, they search for the one who shall receive his joy greater than giving. You search actually, whom shall I give? Whom shall I give? Why? Because you want to unburden yourself. Simple thing, you see. It is just with me. There are many who would be able to use it better than I am using. So you find where it can be given. So that itself you feel more rewarding. And is there anything you would withhold? Is there anything you would withhold? All you have shall some day be given. It will be taken away, not that you will even be allowed to give. It will be just snatched from you. And so give now. Now is the best time to give. It is going to be snatched away anyways. It is, you know that story, I like that, I had told in class many times. I had read it in my childhood. But this message comes very strongly from that story. Close friends, they were neighbors, you know, staying more or less in the close by in one village. And they both were merchants. They used to get things from the big town and then sell those things for a profit in their village. So they went to the big town to buy things. And then when they were buying, one of them thought that, well, I should buy this thing more, it will sell more, but I don't have the money to buy it right now. So he asked him, well, will you just give me, loan me $100 so that I can buy this. As soon as we return our homes, I'll give it back to you. And then he said, okay. And then he decided, okay, I will buy this thing. But before they could buy it, a robber came. And then said, give everything that you have. And started snatching things. Now this one who has taken loan of $100, he said, hey, to this friend, this is your $100, I am giving you back. I am giving you back. Because anyway it is going to be snatched. This is not what one should do to a friend or a benefactor. But the point is, everything that we have, it is going to be snatched. You have to give. It is not that you can hold on to it. What is going with you? There is nothing that you can take with you in this world. Everything will have to go. There is a nice saying, what goes with a person when the person dies? And we see the death. Big house, a lot of money, millions of dollars and whatever. Nobody can take it with you. With her, that person cannot take with him or her. So it says in that saying in Sanskrit that all that stays just here. You cannot take it. Your relations and friends and all that, they also come only up to the burial or cremation ground. And they do not come on the journey after that. Here, that's about it. It is up to that. And then what goes with you after that? Artha grihe tishthanti smashane mitra bandhavaha. Up to that cremation ground, the friends and all, they were, and then there is the obituary said, and a condolence meeting where all the non-existent virtues of that person are spoken of. And then everything is forgotten in no time. It is that Imitation of Christ, a great book, you know. It says that remember, people are going to forget you sooner than you think. It is, we think, look, my contribution will be remembered forever. And in the obituary, people say that, well, that it is, this person will be missed for centuries and so forth. But no, it is gone. And we get about our lives without even thinking that they were. Then that just becomes maybe a photograph and so forth. Sometimes we take a look at. That's about it. Fill our minds with some nostalgia. That is the only thing that remains. Nobody really cares. Great people came like Rama, Krishna, and Jesus, and Buddha, and who cared for, you know, afterwards? The world didn't. They came and went. The world is surviving without them. So it is, everything will be snatched away. What will go with you? That saying says that your karma will go with you. Whatever merit or demerit that you have attained, that will go with you. That is why it is said, give it now. Because you are going to another land, and there this currency, dollars or pounds or whatever, that is not going to work. The euros or the yens or the, no currency of that type, no earthly currency is going to work. So you have to convert it into the proper currency that you can carry with you. If you are going from here to say Japan, then there you have to spend not in dollars, you have to have the Japanese currency there that you can use. So you convert it. So all your money you can convert into what is called karma currency. That is by willingly giving it. Okay, I give it and then I convert it into karma currency. That is why giving donations with right intent, with love and respect, reverence in the act of giving, that is what changes this currency from the earthly currency to the currency that would be going with us as our karma. The act of donation, that is why it is, do it now, while you have chance to convert it, convert it. Otherwise it is going to be snatched anyway. So therefore, it is said, so give now. It is, he says further, you often say, I would give, but only to the deserving. This is a very commonly heard thing, and it makes sense at one level. But many times it is an argument for not giving. That where to find deserving person, since there is no deserving person that I have found, I am not giving to anybody. And every person that there that you can think of and would be in need, but you may think that is not deserving. Not because the person is not deserving, but our idea of holding is covering that I should give. The trees in your orchard say not so, nor the flocks in your pasture. They give that they may live, and it is this idea of deserving, very important. They give that they may live, for to withhold is to perish. To withhold is to perish. To give, the giving is like that, you know. It is what you use, okay. Otherwise give it, otherwise it will eat you up. It is like perishing. It is, there is a very beautiful couplet about money and how to make good use of it. It is said that by Kabir, that these two things are identical, like the water in your canoe, water getting in your canoe, and money accumulating in your home. Both are going to sink, the ship and the home, he says. It is same. That water accumulating, pani baadhe naav mein, ghar mein baadhe daam. In both cases, they are that money in the house, and it is the like the water coming in the canoe. In both cases, the wise man has one job to do, to throw it out with both hands, with all, as quickly as possible. Otherwise, the water coming in the canoe will sink the canoe. So, similarly, and it is so true, friends. How many households I have seen, they were destroyed because of so many strifes and all those very bad things. Why? Because only they had more money that they can consume. You cannot, if you eat more food than you can digest, then it doesn't become conducive to your health or well-being. It is better don't eat it or get it out of the system. It is like that. So, it is what is deserving. Surely, who is worthy to receive his day, his nights, is worthy of all else from you. And he who has deserved to drink from the ocean of life deserves to fill his cup from your little stream. How much are you giving? What are you giving? And what is your capability to give? Let us take a note of this. And what desert greater shall there be than that which lies in the courage and the confidence, nay, the charity of receiving? The courage to receive, you know, it requires a courage to receive, that somebody is giving, and then it is that, well, do I not lower my dignity to get it from somebody? It requires a courage to receive with dignity. It is a big desert otherwise. Oh my goodness, I am living a life of destitute. It is to receive from others. It's a very sad feeling that one will get. And he says, look at that. And who are you that men should rend their bosom and unveil their pride, that you may see their worth naked and their pride unabashed? So see first that you yourself deserve to be a giver and an instrument of giving. Such an important lesson. Let us become a deserving giver. That to deserve the giving, it is a great privilege to give. A very telling incident in Swami Vivekananda's life here in US that really transformed a very well-known person, Rockefeller. Rockefeller was then also a wealthy man, John D. Rockefeller. And he heard about Swami Vivekananda and came to see him. And then at that time, Swami Vivekananda was busy writing a letter. And then Rockefeller thought, being a very well-known and wealthy person, he should be given special respect and so forth. But Swamiji did not do that. Next time, Rockefeller came with a big check of donation. And he said, "Now, Swami, you must thank me." And Swami said, "No, it is for you to thank me that I am receiving this. I have given you the opportunity to become broad-minded. It is in giving that you grow." And then that was the Rockefeller Foundation, which just became an instrument of giving. It is because that is the teaching that went and pierced his heart, that it is giving that is really a privilege. It is because there is a receiver, you are able to give. So thank the receiver that there is somebody who is there to take, and thus I am able to unburden myself. Because there is something, somebody to take, I am able to expand myself. It is very important. Swami Vivekananda in one of his lectures says that, look, is God not capable enough to fulfill all the needs of everybody? Isn't it a blasphemy to think that, well, God has not provided everybody, and so I am going to provide? In spite of the capability to give everybody everything that is needed, still God has kept these people who are in need. Why God has kept them? So that everybody who has will have a scope to give, and thus thereby expand their awareness, become free. So this is an instrument of becoming free that is made by God. By giving, we just use that instrument, the freeing influence of giving. Freeing influence. We all want freedom, but if we hold on to the possessions, then we are bound by them. And that bondage is terrible, friends. Really terrible. Now when you give, you really become free. And it is otherwise, those become your cudgels, the chains that bind us. My money, a big chain that binds me. My house, a big chain. It is not really house, it is my prison. Worse than prison, if we have that idea, it is my house, then a prisoner gets free when he walks out of the prison. It is my house, that idea haunts you. Suppose that house is in Rhode Island. Even if you go to Japan, my house that stays there, you know. It is like that. It is my. And thus it becomes my, means it is my bondage. So let us march to freedom. And this giving is an instrument for that purpose, that it is. And to the receivers, he says, and you receivers, and then says, but everyone is a receiver. Receiver, we receive, all of us receive. In a way, you know, we are not aware that we may be receiving, but we all receive. And then, do not feel the weight of gratitude. This is very important thing. Do not feel the weight of gratitude. It is the God who gives. And you are as worthy a child of God as anybody else. It is not that a person is that you should be grateful to you to feel that weight. It is, don't think. There is that story of a Sufi. He was considered a bit crazy and all that. So it is, he was once saved from drowning by a person. And then every time he would see that person, do you remember who saved you? So one day he said, oh my goodness, he dipped himself in water in front of him several times and came out saying that, well, now I think I have repaid your sense. I was, every time you see me, you would remind me that, well, I saved your life, and so I used to avoid you. Now I feel I have, having saved myself without your help, now I feel unburdened of that sense of gratitude. It is a very bad habit that we all have, to keep people under obligations, under the weight of gratitude, so that they will always be subservient to us. It is, the politicians do that a lot, so that they will have a lot of votes in the elections, good election workers and so forth. Because they put them under the weight. Oh, don't you remember I did such a good turn to you? Yes, so it is, never feel that kind of weight of gratitude. The next chapter is about eating and drinking. I know you are all going to laugh. We all eat and drink, isn't it? Now, the eating and drinking also could be an instrument of our liberation. It is, this is an everyday act that we do, every day several times, many more times than even needed, that eating and drinking. So how can that act itself be that process of liberation, you see? So that is what, then an old man, a keeper of an inn, asks that eating and drinking, tell us about eating and drinking. So, and then he started describing, but we don't have time today, we overstepped already. So, there is always next time, isn't it? So we may discuss it next Tuesday. A quick announcement, if you are not remembering, this Sunday 13th of August, there is a Krishna festival from 11 in the morning till 3:30 p.m. With a little worship, reflections on the life and teachings of Lord Krishna, and so forth. So please do come for that festival. There will be a kirtan also after the prasad lunch. And then there are two more programs which are not happening at the Vedanta Society here, but very nice programs. It is, one is at Tridi Broy's house that we hold almost every year. He lives in West Wareham on 195, very nice house, and he arranges this celebration of the birth anniversary of M, and the chronicler of Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. Now this, usually therefore he holds it right near that date of July 14th or 15th. But this year, due to various reasons, he had to postpone it. And so we will be having it on this Saturday after this, that is on 19th, Saturday the 19th. And then on Sunday the 20th, we have a retreat in Connecticut, that is the Canton, Connecticut. It is a very nice, beautiful estate, and the topic of discussion is immediate experience. It is a beautiful treatise of Shankaracharya that speaks of this, an immediate experience. All our experience that we get is through mediacy of our senses, and this, like when you see through a dark glass, happens, you know, sometimes you have put it on for a long time, and then it was on my eyes that the dark glasses were there, and then I came in my room and still did not remove them, forgot that they were there, and everything was, you know, being seen hazy. Why today there is no light, and the glasses were the problem, you know, that dark glasses. So we have our mind, that is through which everything is seen, and so it is not an immediate experience. So just as we learn to take the glasses, we can also take away, you know, this instrument, and then what will be, that will be the immediate experience, the direct experience. So it's a very illuminating book, a very short treatise by the great philosopher Shankaracharya. So we shall be discussing that at Connecticut. So if you like to come, we can have some carpooling from here. So please let me know beforehand. So thank you very much. We shall conclude with the closing prayers. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Tat Sat Shri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu.